your enlightenment.
Okay.
Is there a flight or MRT that we can take?
Yeah. Well, the scientists are developing a pill. You know, a one-shot pill, and then you. Yes. So actually, regarding this question, I was at the teachings of the incarnation of one of my teachers, and people were asking questions to him along this line. Basically, what is the quick, cheap, and easy way to become a Buddha? And it's a good thing he's a good practitioner. He didn't get angry at the question. Yeah. But the answer to that question is, if you think it's too long and too hard, go complain to somebody. And who are you going to complain to? Yeah, do you complain to the Buddha? Oh, Buddha, 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 the path too long. I want the quick, the advanced thing to do it quickly. You know, it's too hard. Can you make the exam easier? I mean, the Buddha did not invent the path to awakening. He just described it. So you complain all you want about that, and it's not going to do anything. Yeah. Buddha can't change it. I can't change it. The person who can change it, William, is you.
Have to change it?
Yes, because if you want to get enlightened, you have to practice.
That's the problem.
Yes, that is the problem. Yeah, yeah. So it's very much, you know, we're the people that create the causes. We're the people who experience the results. And you can't hire anybody else to practice for you. Yeah. And you can't, you know, complain to anybody that the path is too long or too hard. You know, if we want to become Buddhas, then we have to put the energy in. Yeah. It's like you raised your kids. Yeah. They probably complain to you. Oh, the education's too hard. The exams are too hard. I don't want to go to school so long. Does it make it easier? What did you tell them?
Yeah, Bill. You have to sorry yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, sorry myself.
Okay. So. Yeah, so what do you want me to speak about besides that topic? How to make yourself happy? That's a good question. First thing is to understand that you're the person who creates your happiness and your misery. Yeah, we usually think our happiness comes from outside. Yeah, I want this, I want that, I want the other thing. Yeah, and we think our suffering comes from outside. You know, the weather's too hot, that person insulted me, the economy is going down. Actually, the economy in Singapore is like all the buildings here. But anyway, you know, we always attribute happiness and suffering to things outside of us. And then when we don't get what we want, we're unhappy and we complain because we feel entitled. You know, I mean, I am I, so I should get what I want. And everybody thinks that way. Yeah, don't we? You know, I'm me. I should be able to get whatever I want. Okay, who said? Yeah, who said we can get whatever we want? It's like, I wish I could speak Chinese. It would be so nice if I could speak Chinese. Yeah. Can I just like, okay, I want to speak Chinese. So, yeah, now I speak Chinese. Yeah. Just because I want it, if I don't create the causes and I expect somebody else to develop, you know, a quick sports drink so that I could speak Chinese, you know, or that I could flap my arms and then, you know, I mean, all of our wishful thinking doesn't really get us anywhere. Yeah. And actually, the happiness and suffering comes from our own mind. Yeah. Yeah. Because we, you know, why? So it was suffering. It's pretty easy. Okay. Somebody insults me. Somebody criticizes me. Why do I get upset? Why do I get unhappy? Because I don't want to be criticized. And all criticism is unfair. Unfair. Because I never make mistakes. And I never do anything wrong. And everything I think is right. So why is somebody criticizing me? Yeah. And I get angry. But look at all the thoughts behind how I'm looking at the situation. Yeah, what I'm expecting. Do they have anything to do with reality? Yeah. Whatever I think is right. Is that true? Yeah. I should get everything I want. Is that true? That's not what you say to your kids. Yeah. I don't make mistakes. Is that true? Forget it. Yeah. So, you know, why am I suffering if somebody criticizes me? Because I have all these ideas about the way people should treat me. And my ideas are really nutty. They have no basis in reality. They're unreasonable. Yeah. If I drop those ideas and I accept, you know, it's a free world. Everybody's going to have their opinion of me. Some people are going to like me. Some people are not going to like me. It's okay. Yeah, if I think like that, then somebody criticizes me. Well, okay. You know? I'm not gonna bother getting upset about it, because getting upset about it doesn't do any good. And why am I upset? Because I have these ridiculous expectations. So cancel the expectations. Yeah. And similarly, we usually think our happiness comes from outside. So, you know, I want this, and I want this, and I want this, and I want that, and that, that, that. Unlimited number of things that I want, okay? And we've all had the experience of really wanting something very badly and getting it, and then what?
That's it.
Hmm?
Yeah, after that.
Yeah. You're disappointed. It breaks. It isn't as good as you thought it was going to be. Yeah. Why? Because the happiness doesn't come from the object. Yeah. The happiness, again, comes from, you know, we're craving for something and, oh, I got what I'm craving. But it's not, it doesn't fulfill all my expectations. Oh, I had a friend, in secondary school. And he wanted a Porsche so badly. He's 16 years old, you know, a Porsche, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, the car,
yes.
Yeah, the very expensive sports car. And he kept saying, I want a Porsche. I know his Porsche. His parents, you know, they can't afford the Porsche. Even if they could, are they going to give a 16-year-old a Porsche? But for him, his happiness, his goal in life was to have this a Porsche. Yeah? So, you know, he graduated school, he went to college, he, you know, worked some. Finally, after many years, he got a Porsche. And then it was like, you know, like the first month, oh, it's really good. I can step on the gas and go, and people look at me and must think that I'm rich and important because I have this fancy dancy car.
Yeah.
And, you know, after a month or so, It didn't bring him any happiness. Yeah. And then the thing is, whatever physical, material thing, and also relate the kind of relationships we want to have. If our mind is involved in craving and attachment, again, we overestimate the happiness that something is going to give us. So it actually sets us up for being unhappy. Yeah. On the bodhisattva path, okay, bodhisattvas are beings who cherish others more than themselves and who are aspiring to attain full awakening so that they can be of the greatest benefit to other living beings. They say that when bodhisattvas hear somebody, a beggar or whoever it is, say, give me this, give me this, that the bodhisattva feels so happy. Wow, now I have the opportunity to create the virtue of generosity. Now I have the opportunity to give happiness to somebody else, and that makes him so happy. Can you imagine that? That's the opposite from us, isn't it? Yeah, somebody asks us for something, and why should I give it to you? You know, bodhisattva, oh, I'm so happy here. So I saw this one time when I was with one of my teachers, Khenser Jampa Tekchok. He was the former abbot of Sarajay Monastery. And I had studied with him for several years when I lived in France. Wonderful teacher. So he was the abbot of the monastery, you know, pretty high position. And he had invited us, me and another friend and his translator, who was also a friend of mine, to have dinner. So first of all, here's this highly ranked Geshe and abbot, you know, he cooked the dinner. He cooked the dinner. Then when we came, he put us on chairs and he sat on the floor. We tried to say, Rinpoche, please sit on the chair. You know, we should be sitting on the floor. Please, please. He wouldn't hear of it. He was going to sit on the floor. Okay. Then he served us the food. We should have been serving him the food. He served us. And then in the middle of the meal, a beggar comes to the door. And Rinpoche goes to the door. The beggar says something. Rinpoche disappears to another room. He comes out with one of those fluffy blankets that they have in India that are really cozy. And he gives the blanket to the beggar, who then walks away. And Rinpoche comes back and we finish the meal. Okay. You know, the idea of giving a blanket, a really nice blanket, you know, to a beggar. And Rinpoche was not rich, you know. That made him so happy he didn't think twice about it. Yeah? So where does happiness come from? It comes from our mind, you know? And as long as we're just thinking me, I, my, and mine, happiness eludes us. When we think of others, then there's so much opportunity to experience happiness ourselves by giving happiness to somebody. Okay, I'll tell you another story. This is a personal story. I believe in telling stories about Dharma principles because it shows how you can practice it in your life. Okay, so this story happened sometime, maybe 1995, 96, something like that. And I was on a teaching tour to the former Soviet Union countries. Some of them were in Eastern Europe, and then we went to Russia and also Ukraine and Belarus. Okay, so I was traveling with a young man who was, he was, father was Russian, mother was Ukrainian, okay? And he was translating for me. And so we were on a train and we arrive in Kyiv in the morning. And, you know, I don't know anybody in Kyiv. And we were going to take a train to Donetsk that night. Yeah. So he's thinking, what are we going to do during the day? And he said, I have a friend who lives in Kyiv. And so he contacted her and we went over to her house. So she was a young woman, maybe 24, around that age. Yeah. Again, living in Kyiv in the Soviet times, not rich. Yeah, bare bones. But we were guests. And she took out, you know, her best food, you know, things that she had been squirreling away for company. So we, you know, we had potatoes, of course. That's mostly what you eat. And then she had a little bit of chocolate or something that she took out for dessert. And this was clearly, you know, she was taking this out for us, not for herself, you know. So we spent the whole day with her, and it was very nice. Yeah, I really liked her. And then she was going to take us to the train station to go to Donetsk. So back up a little bit. Before this, yeah, when I had been in Japan, some people gave me a maroon cashmere sweater. Now, when you're a nun, anything in maroon, you know, you don't know if you can get things in maroon because it's sometimes not the color that's predominant. So it was maroon. It was a sweater. I needed a sweater, and it was cashmere. It was so soft. Yeah, I loved that sweater. You know, it was so nice. So we're on the train to go trolley. Yeah, the streetcar to go to the train station. And Sasha, this girl who hosted us that day, was about my size. And the thought came into my mind, oh, give her your maroon cashmere sweater. And then another thought came in my mind that said, no way. I like this sweater. I need this sweater. I'm not giving it. Okay. So Sasha and Igor are chatting. I'm standing there holding the thing in the streetcar, at having an internal civil war. One part of my mind says, give her the sweater. The other part says, no. Okay. Then I start talking to myself. Children, you know, give her the sweater. She's been so kind to you. No. Come on. She's the same size. She will love the sweater. No. Children, come on. Your teachers talk about the benefits of generosity, and you've heard them talking about generosity many times. Give her the sweater. I'll think about it. You need to do more than think about it. Well, yeah, I thought about it, but I can't give her the sweater. It's in the suitcase, and I can't open the suitcase in the middle of the trolley, in the middle of the streetcar. Okay, then open it when we get to the train station. I can't open it in the middle of the train station. Then open it while you're waiting for the train on the platform. I can't do that because the train's going to come. Meanwhile, I'm having this civil war. Sasha goes away. She comes back with a bag full of sweetbread. That's what they call pastry. for us to take on our train trip so we would have something nice to eat. Okay, look, children, you're gonna give her this sweater. I can't. Try. I can't. Where am I gonna open the suitcase? Well, if you can't open it on the train, then on the platform, open it when you get on the train. I can't do that because the train's gonna go off and I can't give her the train. She'll be on the train. No, because if I give it to her while she's still on the train, then she has to jump off. She's gonna get hurt. You know, I want to protect her life. I can't give her this one. Yeah? So much misery inside of me. Finally, we get to the train station. We get on the train. Okay, I pull out the suitcase and I give her the sweater. And her face lights up like you had given her $1 million. She was so happy. It's like, this is for me?
Yeah. Oh, so happy.
She was so happy. And I'm going, what took me so long? You know, to make somebody this happy, why did I make myself so miserable? You know? Okay, so we're on the train. We get to Donetsk, yeah? I teach there for a week. We're coming back. Okay, Sasha's going to meet us at the train in Kyiv because we're flying out, or at least I'm flying out from Kyiv. And it's warm weather now. The weather had changed, you know, in during the week we were away. Sasha comes to the train station. The weather is warm. She's wearing the maroon cashmere sweater. She loves it. Yeah. This was a big lesson for me, you know, like that you can create so much happiness in somebody else that creates happiness in yourself.
Yes.
And when you're only thinking about yourself, you're miserable. Yeah.
He also very happy. He or she also very
happy. She was very happy. I was very happy. Yeah.
Okay. I also very happy to hear the story.
Yeah, and you're happy to hear the story. Wow. So we can spread the happiness. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Wow,
then you're also so happy.
Yeah.
I'm also very happy.
Yeah. It's nice to think of somebody else, especially somebody who is so kind, who has very little, you know, to make that kind of person happy. Yeah. So His Holiness the Dalai Lama often says, because a question came up to him in teachings one day about, you know, how, about, you know, being compassionate, yeah? And like, don't you suffer when you're compassionate? Yeah, especially if somebody's demanding something from you, especially if they don't even say thank you, you know, and they're taking you for granted. Don't you suffer when you're compassionate? And His Holiness said, no, you know, being compassionate gives happiness to others. And when you do that, when you do something to benefit somebody, yeah, your action of doing it is the payback. Don't expect a thank you. Don't expect a gift. Just your ability to have that opportunity to do something kind for somebody. Yeah, that is your quote-quote reward. That is what makes you happy. Yeah.
Very good.
We talk about politics and religion, and politics and religion is so interconnected. And one of the reasons why I've never really embraced religion for a long, long time is because I always feel that religion is so political, or in the least can always be hijacked for political agenda.
Yeah.
So that's why I find I always keep a distance from it.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about Tibetan Buddhism itself is a question that always comes to my mind. While I learn more and more about Buddhism, I know it's a good thing, it's really good. I gain a lot from learning Buddhism for sure. And I believe, I kind of feel that actually if the world all subscribe to Buddhism, the world will be very, very peaceful. Of course, that's kind of difficult to realize. And talking about that, in China, even the Communist Party, they also know the virtue of Buddhism that bring China back to Buddhism, but they always have worried about Tibetan Buddhism because of of the political issue. So like His Holiness, the West is very supportive of him and make the Chinese government even more worried that he's being used as a bargaining chip in that sense.
Yeah. No.
So issues like that confuse me a lot and also makes me, in a sense, worried about what's going to happen. That is the issue of politics and religion.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot to say about that, specifically about the Tibetan situation. I don't think the U.S. government is using the Dalai Lama to torment China or anything like that. No, I mean, Trump's whole thing is about the economy and rivalry and things like that. Trump doesn't really care beans about the Tibetan situation. Personally speaking, you know, not talking about religion but looking at it from another perspective, I think if China were, what would benefit China most is to talk to the Tibetans while the Dalai Lama is alive. Yeah, because it seems like they're waiting for him to die and so that they can declare the next Dalai Lama and control the Tibetan situation. That will only bring discord and uprising. If China tries to impose a Dalai Lama on them, it will just create chaos in the area. And I think really the best thing for China to do and for the Tibetans to do is to go negotiate while His Holiness is alive, because His Holiness has the power to tell the Tibetans, don't be violent. Yeah, when he's gone, nobody else, I think, has that power to, they can say it, but people don't have the reverence for anybody else. So I think it's really much better to solve it now.
Is this message not passed across to the Chinese government?
Oh, this kind of message that he's been saying to China publicly, and I probably through private channels has read as well, for years and years and years. It's not something new. Yeah. When the Tibetans first had to flee, they were asking for independence. And then His Holiness said, you know, how about some, we don't want to ask for that much. How about autonomy? Yeah, Tibet remains part of China, but we have our own freedom to manage our area of the Tibetan people in accord with our culture. That's all he's asking for, yeah. So it would be nice.
And what is the purpose of empowerment and being?
The purpose of an empowerment is to connect people to the deity because those people want to do the practice of the deity. Okay? Then the empowerment is given to qualified people who have background in Buddhism, who have faith and have taken refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha, who keep reasonable ethical conduct. When you take an empowerment like that, then you usually take the Bodhisattva vow and sometimes also the Vajrayana vow, the tantric vow. And the purpose, actually, according to the scriptures, is, you know, so that people who are qualified, you know, who have some renunciation of samsara, who have bodhicitta, who have some understanding of the emptiness of inherent existence, so that those people are qualified to do the actual practice. If people aren't qualified, then the most they do is they see the deity as inherently existent, and they may pray to the deity. But my teacher used to ask us, you know, then what's the difference between praying to the deity and praying to Mickey Mouse? Or imagining yourself as the deity and imagining yourself as Mickey Mouse? It's a good question, because if people are coming for an empowerment just so they can have a blessing, yeah, well, it plants some seeds in their mind stream, but they aren't really sincere. They're just looking for a blessing so that this life is better. And that's not really the Buddha's motivation, yeah, or the motivation that the Buddha wants us to cultivate when we take an empowerment.
How does that empowerment, with a real empowerment, help that person in this pursuit of the Dharma?
Then still, they, you know, if it were me, I would say, okay, tell me about your Dharma experience. Tell me what you've studied. Do you have a daily meditation practice where you meditate every day? Yeah. If you don't have a daily meditation practice, why do you want to take an empowerment? You know?
So you need to have some basic.
Yeah. Vajrayana is a very advanced practice. Of course, what they do, just giving the empowerment, it's treated as a blessing, but it actually makes the Dharma degenerate, because then people just say, oh, yeah, you know, okay, I can go and get a blessing, and all I have to do is sit there. And the more the teacher, you know, talks in Tibetan and does things in Tibetan that I don't understand, the bigger the blessing I'm getting. Huh? Come on.
You're right. I think that's the impression I also get, right? When people ask me, say, oh, you should go for an empowerment. So it's like, okay, it's like going for a blessing.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's not the purpose of an empowerment. Yeah.
So what would be the basic requirement a person have to meet before?
You have to have some renunciation of samsara, some understanding of bodhicitta, some understanding of emptiness. Yeah, you have to follow the law of cause and effect. You have to be willing to take the bodhisattva vow and keep, you know, and best, you know, if somebody has all five precepts, that's the best. Okay. But nowadays, because see, in ancient times, this was a very private practice. And then it became more and more public. And as it became public, then it just became kind of diluted and diluted, you know, in some ways. So, and then you have, because it's also, you form a connection with the teacher. So you should know the teacher's qualities, which means you should have studied with the teacher. Nowadays, lamas come in on Friday, give a short talk, give an initiation on Saturday and Sunday, leave on Monday morning. Okay. Yeah, it's, but I am quite conservative in this way because I want to follow what's in the scriptures, what the Buddha said. Yeah.
So is there a difference between initiation and empowerment?
No, it's the same word. Yeah, but there's two things. There's the empowerment, and then there's something called a jhanang. Yeah. And the word initiation is often used for both of them, but they're two different ceremonies. Yeah. So the jhanang gives you the permission to do the front generation practice. If you're completely new to Buddhism, do the front generation. You know, in terms of taking refuge, doing the seven limb prayer, imagining light from the deity coming into you and chanting mantra and dedicating merit. Yeah. So it gives you the ability to do that. But, you know, if people are going just because they want the blessing, they're not going to even do the practice. Yeah. And then they, you know, some people come to me afterwards and they say, oh, I took an initiation. And I said, what deity did you take, you know, the empowerment in?
Not sure.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, somebody who had a few heads. You know, I don't know. It was, you know, they don't even know the name. So, in actual fact, did they receive the empowerment? I don't think so. Yeah. But on the other hand, it's better that they sit in the initiation rather than they watch a violent movie during that time. So, you know.
Yeah, just that it's so difficult to think about meeting all those requirements.
Uh-huh.
Having a little, having a small renunciation is still something sometimes when I do some practices, I feel like maybe I do the prostration to the 35 Buddhas. Am I exercising or not actually taking the prostration to the 35 Buddhas? Because if I need to have some renunciation for doing that and to have some kind of like knowledge about emptiness and bodhicitta, I don't know.
The practice of prostrations of the 35 Buddhas does not require an empowerment. Yeah. And you do that practice to purify your negative karma so that then when you study and meditate, you know, you can have a deeper understanding of the Dharma. Yeah.
I was talking with also Venerable Konchob just now. I just realized that all this practices or all my bad ethical conduct, still, thank God, I still have the love of the teaching. I don't know. That's so good.
Yeah.
The things that keep me...
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah. That's wonderful, really. Yeah, because that's what's going to keep you going. Yeah. Yeah. If you didn't have a love for the teachings, then you would, you know, go on a sailboat or just, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, but my question would be, like, it's difficult to meet all those requirements, like the renunciation. If the renunciation is the basis, then... The renunciation is like the metaphor of Serko Rinpoche was talking about the fire in the house and
are you going to go up to the top floor? You're going to get out.
The fire.
Yeah. So it isn't saying you have to have complete renunciation, but you have to have some wish to get out of samsara. You know, because that's what the practices are designed for. You know, the Buddha, you know, he gave some teachings because people wanted teachings on how to be happy this life. He did that. But, you know, his real purpose is to help people avoid lower rebirth, get out of samsara, become fully awakened.
Mm-hmm. My question.
Yeah. And so we aren't perfect. If we fulfilled all those requirements, we wouldn't need the empowerment.
Yeah. It's like,
okay. Yeah.
He said, as a layman, just talk about samsara. It's a very, because we stay in normal life, is it easy to get out of samsara, the daily, normal? What is the basic thing there?
The first thing is to keep good ethical conduct. Yeah, good ethical conduct. Take refuge in the five precepts and live within them, yeah? And then, you know, hear teachings. Contemplate the teachings. Yeah. Go for more teachings, learn more, contemplate more. And then especially to apply the teachings to your life so that you become a better human being. Yeah.
Fine.
It's, yeah. If we say, okay, I don't care what I'm like now. I just want to be a Buddha, you know. And then you just go through your regular life, you know, cheating people, lying to people, doing all this kind of stuff. And what's the use, you know? So, yeah, to really encourage us to be kinder, more tolerant, more generous, more ethical.
The latest study that we were doing was on SAFE, was about the six practices. The sixth,
perfections. Yeah.
And the last one is wisdom, right? And so the last few weeks, we were talking about inherent existence and the option of negation. My when I was reading all of that, which with love, because it was very interesting, I think a lot of bases would not prevent me to understand more. And I realized that two things maybe are just some kind of things that I not... One is the mind. Mm-hmm. I don't think... What you mentioned in the teaching, in those teachings in SAFE, that some people are scientific reductionists. I think I am a scientific reductionist, meaning that I don't see the mind as... something different from the body, I found it difficult to see the mind as something different from the body. Mm. So then reincarnation, then it's something that it's and karma, then all of that is difficult to, you know. So my point now is, what is the mind?
Okay, so you say it's hard to see the mind as different from the body. How is it seeing the body as different from the mind? You start out with the mind. The mind is what you is the faculty that helps you to perceive, to have emotions, to think. Start out with that. How is the body different from that?
It's not thinking.
You think...
No, the body doesn't think.
Yeah, body doesn't think. That's a big difference, isn't it?
No, but what I wrongly think is that why can the mind be a step up of the body, like something that comes?
Because the body is made out of atoms and molecules. The mind is not. The definition of mind is that which is clear and cognizant. Clarity is not made of atoms and molecules. The ability to cognize, feel, experience, that ability is not made of atoms and molecules. Okay. The body and mind, when as human beings, they have some relationship. But when we die, the body gets recycled. Yeah. The mind doesn't cease when the body stops. Yeah. If you say the mind ceases when the body stops, then what created the mind to start with when you were born? Yeah, do you just have a brain and then the ability to cognize and feel and the feeling of self that just pops up out of the brain? Yeah, but think about it. Would that work? You know? I mean, the brain is just atoms and molecules. It's going to, you know, you mix it with water and stir it and it turns into something else. Yeah? And the body, when you know, when you die, it just gets recycled. Whereas, you know.
In terms of this.
Because I was listening to the teaching. From,
oh, I see.
In terms of this issue, about the mind-body, how to understand them, analytical meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a way to search?
Yes, I think that's very helpful. Yeah. Because there's a logical argument for proving the existence of consciousness. Yeah. And okay, I'll go through it briefly. I think it's in Open Heart, Clear Mind. Yeah. But, okay, the consciousness is something that's clear and cognizant, not made of material. The body is something made of material. We say we're alive when there's a connection between these two. But a connection does not mean that they're the same thing. Okay? A connection does not mean they're the same thing. Yeah, because this is connected to that, but that and this are not the same thing. They're different things. There's just a relationship. Okay? So then what's the cause of the body? Okay? It's physical material. You trace it back, and it's, you know, at least in this life, it's your genes plus all the food you've eaten. And then, you know, before that, it was the sperm and egg of your mom. And before that, it was, you know, you can trace the physical continuity, you know, genetically and in terms of what everybody's eaten, because that's what the body is, okay? But when you look at a body, when somebody dies, you know, something's missing. Yeah, what is it that's missing? It's the consciousness. So the consciousness has a different continuum. A consciousness is one moment of mind, and what was the cause of that? The previous moment of mind. And the cause of that? The previous moment of mind, because we can look, you know, we've had consciousness our whole life, and each moment is the, you know, was produced from the previous moment. So the basic thing is that the continuity of consciousness and the continuity of material things, they're different continuities, yeah, and they can't produce each other, you know, at least in the gross form. Yeah. So, you know, when we die, body gets recycled. Yeah. The worms have a good lunch, just like we did. And the consciousness goes on. Before we're born, yeah, there were all the atoms and molecules that consist of the body, but they were in a different form and shape. And there was a consciousness, yeah, which had its own continuum before. And so what was the continuum of the consciousness? Yeah, the previous life. Yeah, the consciousness of the previous life. And so, you know, when you really think about that, it makes sense. Because saying that something that is clear and knowing comes out of something that is just inanimate, unfeeling material substances, this doesn't make sense. It's like saying that fire springs out of water or something like that, you know? That's not going to work.
We have a lot of everything all the time in your mind, but you do not react on it. It's just a thought, negative thought. But you don't react, that means you don't act on it. Let's say you are jealous, it's a negative thought, but you don't act on the jealous, you just keep it as a thought. Is there a negative karma?
just thoughts.
Yeah. It depends how developed the thought is.
You keep it within.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. And maybe it's developing into a plan. Yeah. It's not just a blip that goes through your mind. It's like, oh, let's see. I could do this and this. And then next time, oh, I could do this and that, this. And then, how can I get what I want? And yeah. And so it develops into, you know, just the thought itself, the blip, isn't karma. Yeah.
But the action is karma.
Yeah, but you can have mental action. The mental action is when you start thinking about how to enact your thought.
That is still karma. That is negative.
That's negative karma.
You create the negative karma.
Yeah. If it's a negative thought, if it's a virtuous thought, you're creating virtuous mental karma. Yeah.
You mean that action?
Huh?
Action. What do you mean?
Action.
Yeah. Action, it can be of the body. Yeah. Speech. Yum, yum, yum. Or mind.
Yeah.
What's going on in our mind. Yeah. So we call those the three doors. And everything comes back to the mind because we don't speak without some motivation from our mind. And we don't deliberately move our body without a motivation from the mind. So of those three, the mind is the most important.
So remember, because my understanding of what you just said, the mind, right? Because, I mean, in fact, I was just reading the book this morning. My first time being on my job. And which I often heard, right? She was giving an example about murder, killing somebody. It's a bad karma. If you kill someone, if you kill an animal, insults, anything, it's a bad karma. But, say there must be three conditions that present. One, there must be thinking that you want to kill. Two, you know that this killing will, your action will lead to the death. Third, is that action. Since only the presence of these three will then constitute a bad karma. Right, so therefore, in that light, this
it, there's the motivation,
yes,
the action, and the completion of
correct,
the action.
Correct.
Those three form a complete karma that is capable of giving four results.
Correct.
Yeah, a rebirth. Yeah, what you experience in the rebirth. Habitual actions you do, and the environment that you live in. So if you have all of those complete, it can produce four results. If you don't have all of these complete, it may produce one, two, or three results. Okay? And certainly, if you're just thinking about the mind, you know, your question, you're just thinking about it, but you're developing a plan. Okay. What's a good example? How about Project 2025 in America, you know? So a lot of people were doing a lot of thinking. And, you know, and then they did a physical action of writing it all down. But it all started out in the mind about thinking of doing these kinds of different things, getting all the immigrants out of the country, cutting the budget, you know, slashing social services and so on. Okay. But they spent a lot of time developing that thought and that plan. Yeah. And even in this life, the fact that they spent their mental resources developing that thought, that plan, that's having some effect even now, let alone when they put it into action. Okay. So, yeah, because some people say, oh, I just like daydreaming, you know? I can daydream about this, I can daydream about that. But, you know, we form mental habits And we daydream about the same thing again and again, and then it's very easy for it to become an action. Okay? So when we try and stop non-virtue and create virtue, you know, as soon as you see your mind start, you know, going off on some negative trait, you want to go, whoa, you know, press the stop button. Mm-hmm.